The Walking Dead Season 7, Episode 11 is over. We're just getting started here on The Walking Dead post-show recap. And now, here are the guys who are your Walking Dead smarty pants. I'm Rob Sestrino here with Alex Kidwell, and on the line, Josh Wigler.
Oh my God. So is the Walking Dead smarty pants like the Survivor know-it-alls of Walking Dead podcasting?
The smartest Walking Dead guys around.
Yeah.
We're about to break it down, and we had an all Negan Saviors episode to talk about, Josh, and I really did enjoy this one. How about you, Alex Kidwell?
Yeah, I've got to find my mullet here so I can get in the spirit.
Yes.
Oh my God.
No mullet for Alex Kidwell, but he is wearing a hat tonight.
You know, Alex, I still haven't posted that picture that you and I took in front of our new business, Hair and Wigs, when we were hanging out together in Los Angeles a few weeks ago. But this isn't a joke. I have a great picture of the new business that Alex and I were starting up. I'll send that to you, Rob, so we can post it in the show notes.
Does that run on a point system?
Yeah, I am whatever is like the lowest number you can possibly get in the sanctuary. I'm like, I don't know, a million.
Yes,
that's my assignment.
Well, I had a really great day today here. You know, Walking Dead's always on a Sunday, and it's a, you know, tradition that, you know, my wife and I, we do a brunch on a Sunday, and then we like to head over.
You're a bruncher.
Yeah. And then we like to head over to the Negan's Farmer's Market, where there's all sorts of, they do homemade potato chips,
pickles. I don't like those. No homemade.
Cold medicine.
Homemade.
Bedpans. You name it. You could pick it up all at the Savior's Farmer's Market.
Yeah. He was really eager to get that bedpan. Like, I mean, if he really is like the newly installed like chief engineer or whatever the crap he is, you'd think he could do a little better than just a bedpan.
Yeah, this felt more like the Valley Indoor Swap Meet, which I think is around the corner from my house.
That's great.
Okay, Josh, what was your reaction to this episode all about Negan, Eugene, and Dwight?
You know, I think leaving the first half of season 7, we were kind of like looking ahead at what the next few episodes might start to look like. I think we called pretty early on, like, we're going to get the Eugene and Negan episode. Like, that's just an episode we're going to get. And no matter how bummed with The Walking Dead we were at that point in time, I think even then we were like, that's probably going to be a pretty fun episode. I think that has bared out. This was a fun episode. I enjoyed this episode of Walking Dead pretty tremendously. A few things here and there that are a little bit wonky,
sure.
But that's the way of it. You know, you're never going to get 100% perfect on a show like this right now, I don't think. But so much was so fun. Eugene was just terrific. Really, I feel like Eugene right now, to me, is like one of the safest characters on the show. I feel like he's really solidified his place as like the heart and comic relief of the Walking Dead universe. And I know that we've already lost somebody who kind of embodied that, at least for a time, in Glenn. But I don't know. I just feel like there's something so like Hurley-esque about Eugene that I just feel like this is a guy we're never going to lose. And the way that he just came out tonight, I thought it was so funny. I just thought it was a really funny episode. Even Negan was great. Really enjoyed the episode.
Yeah, he's great. I think that Negan and Eugene could be my two favorite characters right now in The Walking Dead. So I really was enjoying.
They're a good pair. Yeah.
And again, a good foil for each other, where it used to be always Eugene and Abraham. I think that Negan has replaced Abraham as the badass that Eugene looks up to. And we'll see just how much Eugene is working Negan. I do think at some point you will see Eugene turn against Negan. But for right now, I am not mad at this at all.
Interesting. So, Alex, I would love to get your take on this based on what Rob just said. Do you think that Eugene is looking at Negan as like the supreme badass leader, or is there something fishy going on here? That would be my inclination.
And that would be fishy, not lobstery. There is
there's no lobster. We're out on lobster.
Unfortunate. Yeah, I mean, I do think, you know, certainly comparing, if we're going to compare Abraham to Negan, Mother Dick always going to take the cake over asshole in the way of insults.
Yikes.
However, where Eugene's head is at right now, I think is an interesting conversation, because he's definitely a coward. He admits it. He freely admits it. But I think it may be very much just kind of, a bit of camouflage, where he just knows what he needs to do right now to survive. If circumstances were to change, I don't know that he would stay loyal to Negan if Rick showed up with people at the gate.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, you really get it in this scene, that, you know, the first real scene of Eugene and Negan in the episode when after Eugene has been gifted these pickles and, you know, he runs into Negan in the courtyard and he's being made fun of and everyone is laughing at him and he's crying because he's scared because he is baseline a coward. But then he very quickly snaps back into the story that he had been using during his time with Abraham and Rosita. He brings up T. Brooks Ellis again. He talks about, like, the black ops that he's involved in and how he can't really tell you anything about how he's involved in trying to, you know, cure the world and fix the zombie apocalypse and everything. So we're already seeing him resort to old tactics. To me, that's a real tell that Eugene's playing a character right now. And I really think that he is still firmly Team Alexandria, and he's just playing this a hell of a lot smarter than Daryl Dixon played it.
Yeah, he may not be brave and he may not be strong, but he can spin a yarn, old Eugene can.
He's brave in his own right, you know? Like, I think that, you know, he's playing the Craven card, and I think that that comes naturally to him because he is a bit of a Craven. He is Samwell Tarly-esque as well as Hurley-esque. But I think that there's some mad genius to it, too, where, like you said, Alex, camouflage. And I think that him being in Negan's good graces, having the run of the Sanctuary while he's able to maybe, you know, come up with some plans to help figure out things for Rick and everybody, I think that's a good move for him, and I think that that's what's going to be going on right now.
But I love this about that character because it's so relatable to have somebody, okay, that they come and they take you and you're Negan's prisoner. And
then you're just completely, utterly stone cold Negan.
Like, right. I was Negan before I met you, he says to him, which is amazing.
Could you grovel any harder?
Maybe the best, like, line delivery of the whole season, I think.
He almost went into, you complete me, Negan.
Yes.
But it's the same sort of thing that we've seen Carol do at Alexandria of, okay, yeah. I'm going to take on a persona so I can fit in. I find it frustrating when you have a Daryl that when Negan says, what's your name, he won't even say it. Just say you're Negan. Who the hell cares?
But I mean, that's true to Daryl, right? Like, Daryl is so hard-headed, and Eugene, this is so much more in character for Eugene.
Yeah. And it was really, really fun to get to see all of that play out. So let's talk through the Eugene part of the story, and then let's go through the Dwight part of the story, because they both kind of had their own separate arcs that don't have a ton of intersection between them up until the end of the episode. And of course, we are getting set for our Walking Dead feedback show later on this week, where we will be answering your feedback questions. Send them in TWD@postshowrecaps.com or postshowrecaps.com/voicemail. Josh Wigler had said last week there were not enough people calling in and doing impressions of Walking Dead characters.
Yeah, that's definitely exactly what I had said to you, Rob. 1,000,000%. So, definitely the case. Yeah. Definitely not the opposite of that. Definitely not.
All right.
Definitely what Rob said.
Let's start with the Eugene story. So Eugene comes through, and I thought at first we were going to start to get a little bit of a romance between Eugene and the woman who is leading him around. Did you guys catch what her name is?
I've been calling her Necktat because
Necktat.
She's got that
Necktat.
Yeah.
No, I don't Necktat have her Necktat. Name. Is she the same person who killed Olivia?
Oh,
sounds right. She was definitely there. She's the one that takes Eugene away, and she's, you know, she's been with Eugene ever since. She's, you know,
yeah.
She is to Eugene as Dwight was to Daryl, I think, in that, like, every prominent prisoner has a keeper, so to speak. So that's what seems to be to me.
Is it a rat? No, a rat was somebody else. That was a different person.
Yeah.
So this is not, it was a rat that killed Olivia. This is not a rat. This is a human being. And I did not catch her name. someone will have to fill us in on that.
No worries. And the Walking Dead stories think did highlight that she has called him haircut before when she was at Alexandria. So I think that there is some, at least a little bit of backstory between them. But I think that Eugene is expecting to get the Abraham and Glenn treatment once he arrives.
I got it. I found it. I found it. I searched the Walking Dead wiki. It's Laura.
Laura.
Laura is the name. Is the name of the woman who is antagonizing Eugene.
Yeah.
I don't even like your little haircut.
Well, I don't even know how much she's antagonizing him. She's basically saying, like, what do you want to eat? I can get you anything. And that's when Eugene says, can I have lobster?
Lobster, please.
Yeah. No.
What's the lobster Trumbador? What is it from Lego Batman?
Thermidor.
Thermidor. Yeah. Got it. Yeah.
Hey, Kevin Mahadeo, I think, had to stop down two or three times to get that right on the podcast.
I had some that's of that really in Jamaica. It was fantastic.
It's really Trumbador. Only funny to me, but that's very funny to me.
Did you microwave it, Alex?
So I did not. A girl who I was in Jamaica with had never had lobster before.
Whoa.
And I advised her.
Is this story safe for the podcast?
It is. I advised her multiple times. We were there on spring. It was a college spring break trip. I advised her multiple times not to eat the lobster the next morning. She did so anyway. And the whole rest of the trip was ruined for her.
Oh, boy.
Probably a similar story at the sanctuary, which is why she's like, do not even bring up lobster. You don't want to know what happened when we all tried to eat lobster. It was a disaster. It was disgusting.
Yeah, they didn't have refrigerators. You can't let the lobster Thermidor go for 12 hours and then come back to it. It doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
Josh, I know you are a Italian food connoisseur. Do you prefer the orangey or the red tomato sauce?
I have no idea what that even means. Is the orangey like the, she's trying to describe like a vodka sauce, which you would think of as a pink sauce, not an orangey sauce? Is it like an arrabbiata sauce? I don't know. I have no idea what the orangey is. Or I'm completely confounded.
Yeah, or you just mix the marinara with the Alfredo.
Oh, maybe.
Maybe orangey.
That could be orangey. I've never done that. Have you ever mixed the marinara and the Alfredo before?
Yeah, they used to do it in like at the college pasta bars to give you like a third option. You when you only have two.
Mix and match. Yeah, no, that's nice. I like it.
Yeah,
that's like coming up with like the Russian dressing, the ketchup and the mayo. Yeah. So I guess a similar principle.
Yeah,
and so. They have homemade potato chips, and Eugene doesn't want homemade potato chips, Josh?
He's out. He's out. What? He doesn't want any of that freshly kettle-cooked potato chip goodness. He is done. He is all-American. He just wants his standard, you know, supermarket store brand potato chip. Maybe he would, you know, maybe he'd be good for kettle-cooked if it was like Cape Cod potato chips, where it's like a store brand potato chip. But no, he doesn't want your homemade fresh stuff. I don't know why. He's just not into it. He would rather have your pickles.
Yeah, so, but no Miss Vicky's?
I guess not. No Vicky's, no Utz's. Being on the Utz.
For Eugene, so homemade potato chips are out. Homemade bullets are in.
Yeah, I think so. Homemade pickles are in as well. It's really just the chips. Maybe he had an experience, a bad one before the apocalypse.
What's your take on pickles, Alex?
They're good. I think they're especially good when you're needing to rely on preserves.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. Wiggler.
This is where we are. This is where we are with The Walking Dead, right? Like, we have to stop down and do like 3 minutes on pickles. That's where we are with this show. That's the point.
Not tonight. This is a wonderful episode.
Where else are you getting your essential roughage? There's no like fresh cukes. So you gotta do some pickles.
Now, my question for you guys, as we're talking through the importance of pickles, are you like a full sour, a half sour,
or do you like no sour?
You don't know the difference?
Oh, I like a good full sour. But on a nice summer day, a new pickle can be quite refreshing.
All right. I'm very cautious. I'm a cautious guy. I go half sour. Half sour at most.
So we now know Eugene loves the pickles and he like carries the jar around with him
like an infant.
Right.
Like he was like Father Gabriel with baby Judith, just like protecting this thing for dear life.
Should he get like what do they call that thing that like that Zach Galifianakis had the baby in
Bjorn?
Yeah, the Bjorn.
pickle Bjorn.
He expects him to take it back at any moment. Don't revoke my pickles.
He just goes around rummaging through the supplies, finds like a stuffed like a baby toy or something, and uses like the limbs from that on and fuses that onto the pickle jar, and it's just his baby pickle jar from now on.
I'm gonna call this a Grimbly Gunk or whatever.
yes, this is my son, Grimbly Gunk Pickle. He's like really going all in on the saviors at this point.
Wait, you don't think that the bedpan was going to be used as an unbreakable pickle carrier, do you?
I'm training baby pickles how to use the bathroom.
The bedpan is a more efficient way to carry pickles because it cannot break. It is indestructible for carrying pickles around.
Really ties the room together.
As an infant, it is always in need of the bathroom.
All right. So we then get to see when we have Eugene check into his room. Alex Kidwell was especially psyched to hear Easy Street once again.
Yes, there it is. Josh called it.
Of course. Obviously, that was going to happen.
Yeah.
Obviously. Like, there's no way we're having somebody come to the sanctuary for the first time, and it's one of our main characters, and they are not going to be treated to Easy Street.
But I figured...
That's the red carpet over there.
Yeah, I just figured, you know, once he's not tortured, oh, he's safe. And then he just turns on, like, a local public savior access radio. And that's, like, the only song that plays.
There was some bad
champagne on the gravy train.
There was some bad music in this episode, like the return of Easy Street. And then there was that moment where Eugene, like, kind of Heisenberg's
right.
number 16.
Like a montage.
Yeah, and then, like, it just, like, cuts immediately to just, like, this really, I don't know, this grating song. I don't know what it was called. I don't want to know what it was called. I never want to hear it again.
Yeah.
And having said that, I'm sure I will now be pelted with links to the YouTube of that.
Was it the reprise to, what was it, like, Space Junk or whatever? From
No, Space Junk. Space Junk's my jam. So is okay. Space Jam also.
All right. So
Space Jam's my jam.
Finally, we get to, after Eugene gets a tour of the farmer's market, we get to see him meet up with Negan and they get an introduction. And so he is under the impression that Eugene is a smarty pants, that he made the bullet that's in Lucille that somehow did not break a baseball bat. Even though
it's a very
routinely,
sturdy bat.
I've seen baseballs break baseball bats many times during a baseball season.
Yeah, well, that hit the meat of the bat. And usually when a bat breaks, it's because somebody, you know, cut in on the handle.
Yeah, okay.
And what if the bullets that Eugene is capable of making are just like a little bit weaker than the common bullet? You know, like just like strong enough to hurt. Not strong enough to break a baseball bat.
He made it out of like Monopoly pieces and thimbles anyway.
Yeah, well, yeah. They're taking the thimble out of the Monopoly pieces.
That's even less raw material for Eugene to
work
with.
Yeah, it's actual factual as reported by News AF this week.
Oh my God, I haven't listened to News AF yet this week. First of all, spoiler alert. Yeah. And second of all, how dare they? That's incredible. The thimble is an iconic piece in the Monopoly set.
Oh, they're putting a new piece in. I don't know what they're putting in.
First, they take away the thimble. Then they take away Bill Paxton. What else is going to happen? I'm so upset. This is a terrible week.
I think those two things were unrelated, Josh.
For the little metal iPhone 6S.
Yes.
I'm sorry. I'm still just really bummed about Bill Paxton. R.I.P.
Yes. That we're all there. We're all still upset. So going back to Negan. All right, so...
Hard transition.
Yeah, I'm sorry. That's the best
I can
do.
You know, in another world, I feel like Bill Paxton would have been a decent Negan. You know, I feel like he's kind of got a Negan look.
I could see it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I've seen both him and Jeffrey Dean Morgan in, you know, some similar roles in the past. So it works for me.
If
works.
Only.
It'll work.
It's in my head canon now.
So Negan is asking Eugene about what he's capable of. He tells him how he made the bullet. Now, I thought that Negan was going to have Eugene go to work on making bullets, but I guess that's not an issue for the Saviors. Saviors are kind of well-stocked on ammo. Negan has a different problem that apparently walkers are just like breaking in half on Negan. Josh, this seems like a unusual problem to have in the Walking Dead universe.
You know, I guess they just, the gravity does its thing eventually. You know, these walkers are decomposing, they're, you know, impaled on these fences, and eventually, you know, science happens, man, and these bodies are just gonna split in half, and it's really not great. But Eugene, having learned many a thing or two along the way, he knows exactly what to do. He has an ingenious plan for how to affix the zombies to the fence.
I'm just a little confused. Why does Negan need fully intact walkers attached to posts?
Yeah.
To complete his moat. I mean, he's putting them to work for him. That's what he says. So, you know, they're free labor to guard the fence as long as he has them like fixed in position. The problem is they're not staying.
So they're almost like some sort of like barbed wire, I guess. But yeah. I mean that if
made out of enamel,
like a chomping zombie at the top of the fence. I mean, if it's attached to the fence and not moving anywhere, why does it need legs?
Well, I guess it doesn't, but you need to have them, you know, all over the place. They need to not be falling off the fence or unable
I think
to-
that. Yeah, I think you're also underrating the strength of a zombie shin kick. Like, if it was able to just, like, kind of, like, kick you in the leg as you were going, like, that would suck. You'd at least be aggravated, if not outright injured, by such an action.
Yeah. All right, well, Eugene says that what they need to be doing is smelting. They should be smelting the zombies.
Yep. Smelting.
Yeah. Problem As if solving. These zombies don't smelt bad enough on their own. Wah, wah, wah.
Yeah. Negan was very excited. He said, "God damn, if that's not the best thing I ever heard."
Not only is it practical, that is badass as hell.
It's just so cool. That sounds like a ton of fun. Yeah, he's like basically talking about having like, I don't know, like I'm picturing like, I don't know, like some like version of like the T-1000 mixed with a zombie, like what he's describing is like some sort of liquid metal creature. Maybe not so dissimilar to good old Winslow from the other week.
This is so much better than what the garbage people are doing.
Yeah, they're going around the fence and giving everyone the Viserys Targaryen treatment. Pour that molten metal over your head there.
Yeah, golden crown.
Just up, make sure you get it in all the gaps. Now make sure it up. You missed a spot.
Yeah. That's good. I like it. I think it's a good tactic. I mean, I'm really excited about there being like a wall just like filled with liquid metal zombies. That seems like that could be fun.
Yeah, that could be good. It'll be a good effect later on in the season once they finish the job. So Negan wants to thank Eugene for this operation. And what he does is that he's going to send some of his wives over to visit. Did you say wives, plural? Yes, plural.
Oh, you did indeed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that does seem like, but again, no funny business. Just
it's Arrested Development rules. No touching.
No touching. Right. So they'll just come over and hang out with you for a while, and then that's it. That's it.
And they'll hang out with you. They'll treat you nice. They'll smell really good. You're going to have the best night of your life. You get to play a lot of video games. It's going to be great.
We end up seeing three of Negan's finest over at the apartment of Eugene playing Atari. Did either of you guys recognize that game?
Nope.
Yeah.
It was a little, but I mean, you know, and I was a little disappointed too, because I think of myself as kind of an old school video game connoisseur, but no, I got nothing on that one.
Josh, you Atari guy?
I definitely came on here hoping that Rob, you being a couple of years ahead of me, maybe you had this one, or Alex, I felt like maybe you could pocket this one. I don't have it. I'm out. I don't know what the game is. I'm a terrible nerd. I think that Chris Hardwick said he mentioned the name of it.
Yeah, I didn't have it down. Yeah. Anyway,
I didn't write it down.
Or something.
Man. Yeah. Tune into Talking Dead and find out.
It's a shame. I mean, there is an Intellivision still in my parents' basement. You would think I would have the information.
No. Okay. So we end up with, two of the three wives being interested in at least chatting with Eugene. And the third one is just getting wasted. That's Amber. And she's upset. And Eugene turns down a massage, which I think is probably the right call.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like it's no sex, you know, it's not like he's not crossing that line all the way. But like maybe he's nervous. Maybe he feels like he's being watched. He just doesn't want to come close to that line.
And so that they start talking about the human genome project that he says that he had worked on. He tries to mess with them and say that he cannot talk about it with them because it's too classified.
Your pay grade, Red.
Yeah, yeah. And they get onto the subject of, can he make a bomb? And he says he can out of household items. This is where I thought that Eugene was getting into some dicey territory, Josh.
Why? What was the problem for you with this?
Because, I mean, you went from Eugene that he was, like, petrified of what was going to happen to him, and then Negan's wives come over, and then he starts talking about making bombs. I'm like, you know what? Why don't we just sort of like get back down to just calm down, Eugene.
Yeah.
Like, let's not do anything that's going to get you back introduced to Lucille tonight.
But that wasn't a bomb, you know, like it was a parlor trick.
It's the first night, Eugene. Could you be on your best behavior?
It was like 30 seconds of a magic trick, you know, it was just like da 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 da, da, and just like some foamy cool stuff comes out and two balloons explode and everyone claps their hands and goes home with a lollipop. Like it's a birthday party. There's no harm. There's no foul here. And if they already know that Eugene can make bullets, it's no surprise that this man can make bombs too. I think that this is okay.
There was, for me, a bit of a discrepancy where he's describing like what he can do. And it sounds like, you know, it's right out of like Steal This Book, where he's like an anarchist. He's going to build something. And then he comes out and he's got like two gloves blown up into balloons, and he basically put some Mentos and some Diet Coke. Like, that's all he did. I'm like, all right, Eugene. I learned that one from Bill Nye, too.
Yeah. Well, everyone was very impressed. You know, it's been a long time, first of all, since anyone has really seen a Mentos in action. So I think, you know, it's a pretty low bar for Eugene to have to clear here.
Next, for my next trick, turn out the lights and watch what happens when I bite into this wintergreen lifesaver.
Negan, the fresh maker.
Magic. Yeah. I just thought at some point during the magic show that Negan was going to come out like in his robe, like, what the hell is going on out here? I'm trying to sleep.
Oh my God. Well, now I'm just thinking of if Eugene really starts getting into this magic thing and like really wants to start putting together like a post-apocalyptic circus, I happen to know a guy that has a tiger.
Yes. And looks like next week we're headed to the amusement park, so it could all be coming together.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. Oh, it's all happening.
Yeah. So we are, again, Negan's wives all very impressed with all this. And so,
except for Amber, who is really
except for Amber, she's not
difficult
really,
time.
She's not
difficult
really that impressed.
She can't even see
thing.
That far. She's so drunk.
Yeah. And so they have a proposal for Eugene, and they say to Eugene that Amber is so depressed that they want him to assist in euthanizing Amber, and so that she could take a sleeping pill and never wake up because she's had it so much with Negan. And Eugene is remarkably sympathetic to this. And this is the whole point in the episode where I was just yelling at the TV, what are you doing, Eugene? Why get involved with this, Josh?
Doesn't this bear out to not be such a bad thing for Eugene, potentially, though? I mean, he's going to figure out pretty quickly that they're trying to get him to make some sort of poison that is going to be lethal enough in dosage to take out Negan. And Eugene, being at least a man apart in terms of intelligence, as he describes earlier in the episode, I feel like he quickly figures this out. Like, he's asking, like, I need to know the body weight. These two ladies are saying we're going to need two doses of this thing. So if he makes this, if he's holding on to it, and if he does have a secret grudge against Negan at some point down the line, then he at least has it in his back pocket, and I think that he proves his loyalty later on by not handing the thing over. So I think that Eugene has actually made the best of both situations.
What do you think he made? Was it ricin?
Yeah, probably. This is AMC.
Yeah.
Well, I do think that crossover. We do have a yes. little bit of the Chekhov's suicide capsules at some point to come into play. That's going to loom large. What Eugene needs to do is find some sort of electrical socket and tape yes. those MFers on the back of that and screw it back in and then just wait for a rainy day.
Yeah, that seems elaborate.
Yeah, so look, I've seen this done before, Josh.
Yeah,
nice.
Yeah, you gotta do it's always something like that, or you tape it to the underside of the inside of the toilet, you know, at the restaurant before you make your move.
Sure, yeah. Sure. I just felt like that Eugene figured out a little late in the game what was going on, where that there was a plot to kill Negan. He made the murder weapon and just didn't give it to the people that wanted to kill Negan right before they were going to do it.
Yeah, but do you think that anyone, like, I don't know, well, I feel like he has that murder weapon in his back pocket now and he can use that whenever he wants.
But here's where I thought that this was a, you know, why is he getting involved with this? That they want to help kill one of Negan's wives, which is in the world of The Walking Dead, of course, not in our world. People are not property. Okay. This is very well established in our own rule of law and moral code, but I don't think Negan would see it that way. If Eugene helped assist one of Negan's wives with a suicide, I think he might be pissed.
You don't think there's no Supreme Court ruling on that? There's no People versus Eugene coming down the road. It's just Negan.
Well,
Negan says that's out.
I don't think Eugene would ever do it. I don't think that he's ever taking this mission on with the intent of handing this medicine over, handing these suicide pills over.
Why string them along like that? If he could make this at any time, why does he go through the labor of making the capsules to never give it to them?
Because, you know, maybe at this point it's it's like the idea is now in his head. He's like, oh, you know what? Not a bad idea to just make this thing that would be very easy for me to make. Apparently, I have free reign over all of the supplies here. Negan thinks I'm such a wuss that I would never do something like this. I could just have this in my back pocket and no one would ever look. And these people just gave me the idea. Like, I think it could be that simple. I don't think he's ever thinking that he's going to hand this over to these girls. I don't think that he's ever going to, you know, go in with Negan's wives on this plan. I don't think that's ever on Eugene's mind at this point.
I thought it was, and then he has second thoughts or eventually figures out what's going on.
Yeah, I guess I did too, where I thought he starts making it and then kind of like puts it together and realizes like, oh, why do they need two? Oh, wait, what's going on? Like, I think he's kind of...
If that's the case, then he is not a man apart in terms of...
No, I don't think he really is. I think that's his part of his story. But I think that he's like towing this line right now between I'm a coward and I know it and I want to be brave and be a good person. And he just can't. And I think that's where he is at the end of the episode where he's like, yep, I'm Negan. It is what it is. But something, some catalyst is going to need to come along to kind of like jumpstart him back into, you know, the path that he knows he should be on.
Josh, I did like it when Negan's wives were telling him, like, no, Eugene, you're good. He's like, I'm not good. I'm not lawful. Yeah. I'm not neutral or chaotic.
Yeah, what do you know, Frankie?
Yeah. He's got the whole morality chart. He knows.
The morality chart?
The morality chart.
So this is when then we saw Eugene then cut the line. And again, I thought that Eugene is really throwing his weight around here with the saviors.
Come on, be nice.
No, you know what I mean. I'm not sure why he's like taking on this persona of the big man on campus all of a sudden, Josh. So you would think if he was trying to be this person to ingratiate himself, wouldn't he try to be a little bit more inconspicuous?
No, I think if his cover story with Negan is like, oh my God, I'm so happy to be here. I'm so Team Negan. I love this. I'm going to make this place so awesome. It's going to be incredible. Then why not go all the way in on that? I guess like the only like, you know, the real drawback is like he's being mean to like number 16 over here. And who knows how he's treating number 35 or whoever else is, you know, numerically assigned in this system here at the Saviors compound. Maybe he's not paying enough attention to little people, but I think in terms of like sucking kneecaps with Negan, I think it's a good job. I think he's doing the right thing. I think that's the way to go with Negan. Negan is a guy who likes to have his ego stroked. You see it with his interactions with Dwight all episode long.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it was said explicitly, but I certainly got the implication from Nektat when she's showing him around there that Laura. That you know, he doesn't need the waiting line, maybe. Like maybe he's like a little bit like he doesn't have to deal with some of the stuff that like the riffraff that seems to all sleep in the garage or whatever, where he's got his own apartment. I don't know if he has to wait in line. And certainly once they kill Dr. Carson, why has he got to wait in line? I mean, what's Negan really going to do? He thinks that Eugene's his only doctor left, right?
I guess so. I know that Eugene says he's PhD. I guess that Negan felt like that was okay to like, I don't know if Negan necessarily understands the difference between like a science doctor is not necessarily the same as like a medical doctor.
My mom's got her PhD in speech.
Right. Right. So I feel like that again, we'll talk about the branding ceremony when we talk through the Dwight storyline. So eventually, Negan's wives come back, and Eugene says, pump the brakes, Red. No suicide capsules for you.
Yeah, these are mine. Claimed.
That's absolutely the case. He is not going to turn over the pills. And if they try to turn him in, he's going to narc on them, and Negan will believe him because he's more valuable.
That feels like a bluff. Like, I don't know. I feel like Negan would have enough of a BS detector, and Eugene, stage two badass though he may be, I feel like would be visiting PP Pants City pretty quickly before he held on to that lie. I don't know. I feel like Negan trusts the wives over Eugene at this point.
I mean, I think that he would believe Eugene, but I think he might be mad too. Like, I could definitely see there being some punishment for Eugene, like at least get his Atari taken away for a couple nights.
It might
or
be a bluff, but
a forced haircut.
Yeah.
The guy's just so unpredictable. It's like, yeah, would you really want to risk it? I don't want to put myself in the position where he's the decider over my fate. I don't want to set myself up like that.
Yeah, well, it sets up this very climactic scene where Negan comes at the end of the episode, and you don't know necessarily what the wives told Negan. And so he really is going to give that loyalty test that he's done, that we've seen him really try to do with Daryl and with Carl in different scenes. And this is the first person who's really all in on Negan. And, you know, Negan doesn't get to finish the question when he says, you know, I'm stone cold Negan. Yeah. I was Negan before.
I'm totally, utterly stone cold Negan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I loved it.
It's the right answer. That's the answer. I think that's the answer in that situation. I think that's who you want to be. You want to be completely Negan. And I think if Eugene is trying to infiltrate here, I think that this is exactly the right answer.
At the end of the episode, we see Eugene and Dwight. Now, I think we all expected there to be a little bit more interplay between Dwight and Eugene in this episode, considering their famous encounter where Eugene had bit Dwight last season.
Nope. Don't want to talk about it. Dwight does not want to talk about it. What does not want to remember at all that this is a thing that happened. Let's move right along.
I apologize for my aforementioned jumping.
Stop.
But yeah, Eugene doesn't even bring it up. He just says, okay, look, I don't know if you remember my name.
Well, I think he's trying to be like, I don't know if you remember that time that he's like, yep, got it. We've discussed it. It's fine. It's good.
Josh, who outranks who right now, Eugene or Dwight?
I think Dwight is still probably got more seniority. I think also Dwight, he impressed. You know, this was an impressive episode for Dwight in Negan's eyes. So I think, if anything, Dwight's stock has risen after this episode.
Yeah, I think Eugene exists kind of on a separate bubble. Like, a doctor doesn't really factor into
the overall
hierarchy. But yeah, you did hear Dr. Carson say, you keep this up, Dwight, Negan's going to sign you your own outpost soon. So, you know, I guess that he's like a few merit badges away from becoming a Simon. That's all I can figure.
I guess so.
Yeah, he's not quite a Simon. But above Eugene.
Like three-quarters Simon. Yeah.
All right. So speaking of Dwight, again, big Dwight storyline. And we pick things up with Dwight where we saw Daryl got let out of the cage when he escaped. Dwight is realizing that there has been an escape. And Sherry, at the same time, is missing. So a lot of stuff going on, a lot of stuff pointing to Dwight, and he's going to get roughed up a bit by some of the saviors, Alex.
Yeah, gets a little bit of a roughhousing, gets another night in the facility he'd been keeping Daryl in. So, Sherry made a move, and Dwight's the one that's left holding the bag here.
Yeah. Josh, the decision from Sherry, like, why? I don't understand necessarily her reasoning of that. I had to let Daryl out because him being here was reminding you too much of who you were. So I had to let him go and run away to help you.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
That seemed like a little bit of a, it's kind of like, oh, what are you talking about? Like, I have to sleep in today because I need to be rested so I can talk to be at my best for when I spend time with you.
And if she is just trying to help him forget the rest of his humanity, is that really a favor?
Yeah. And I know Negan would be pissed and I might, disfigure you again, but...
Yeah, you would think that if Sherry... Sherry's not a good person. Sherry freed Daryl Dixon. Oh, wow. That is a bridge too far.
She's not a good person, Josh.
She is a kind-hearted, pure of soul. You heard what Dr. Carson said. We don't see a lot of Sherrys in the apocalypse anymore. This world does not have a lot of room for people who are that great.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess so.
Dr. Carson was great in this episode. He was literally on fire, so we have to trust that guy.
So looks like that Dwight is now, in the position where Daryl was. But Negan was a forgiving guy and basically sends Dwight out to go bring back Sherry. Now, this is the second time that we're going to see in this season where Dwight is going to have to go out on an errand for Negan to go bring somebody back. And just as the second time, he's going to say, oh, yeah, they died. I mean, I guess it happens a lot, but eventually.
I also think that, like, this is such a high stress mission, too. It's so personal for Dwight. You know, there's this really great scene between Negan and Dwight when Dwight is still behind bars and you don't even see Negan. You just hear his voice. It's like such a boogeyman voice. And he's, you know, really like hammering home why this is a big deal. And at this point, we know why it's a big deal to Dwight as well. This is his ex-wife. But when we first met these two, Dwight was not even scarred up yet. So we're, you know, when we met Dwight, we're talking about a guy that's closer to the person in the letter than the person we've spent most of our time with on the show. So I don't know. I don't know. I don't know why Negan just accepts his answer as is. Like, I guess, like, what kind of proof can he bring back if Sherry really was devoured by walkers? But just to take his word on it and to throw their doctor in the fire, yeah. You know, just on Dwight's word, it is a little
questionable. Negan. I mean, far be it from me to criticize Negan ever, but I think that Negan does make some curious decisions. And I also think it was a curious decision. Why not send somebody with Dwight? You know, that I don't think that Negan quite knows if Dwight was an accomplice on this or not. And he's certainly a person of interest. Why not send, you know, Negan has so many other people at his disposal. Why not send Nektat along for the ride with Dwight?
Well, I think we're starting to finally see a couple, you know, holes in his armor here. Like, he seemed like this infallible, you know, antagonist in the first half of this season. Now we're seeing that there are a couple weak links in the chain, so to speak. And I think that's an element
of
it, too.
We need to smelt the walkers on those parts of the chain.
I think a big part of this is that Negan trusts Dwight too much, and that could end up being a big factor moving forward. And, I mean, you know, you saw it, I think, from his interaction. Like, stone cold Dwighty boy. Like, he totally thinks Dwight's his guy now. He thinks he has successfully reprogrammed a guy that is, I think, at this point, just so over life that he's just kind of going through the motions, but who knows if he could wake up and change his mind at some point.
Yeah, I think the thing with Negan's like, he's got this, you know, tyrannical power here in the sanctuary, and everyone worships him. Everyone, you know, trembles at the sight of him, or, you know, is in such solidarity with him and has such reverence for this guy that he's going to eventually believe the hype, and he is going to have that same inflated sense of self. And I think through that, you have a character who is going to have some blind spots. And I think that Dwight is a blind spot. I think that the blind spot is everyone is so afraid of me or so in awe of me that they will never step out of line, especially not Dwight. Look at Dwight. I took his wife and he's still in line. And I think that is, you know, he's putting too much trust in a guy like that, too much faith in the idea that nobody's ever going to challenge him. And eventually he may come to find that that is not the case.
And I think you're seeing a little bit of kind of Negan's words almost coming back to bite him a little bit from the very first episode of the season, where he says to Rick, you know, I get it. You were King Poop for so long that you just assumed that was always going to be the way it is. I think he could, like, you know, listen to those words now and apply them himself, because I definitely think that's true of all leaders. And he's one too. He's not above the system.
You're not too big for the system, Negan.
No. No one is too big for the system. The system is bigger than all of us. Bow to the system.
We end up seeing Dwight make a pit stop at the doctor. He needs to get stitched up. Now, we saw Sherry in the doctor's office in the first half of season 7. And again, Dr. Carson, he's asking some probing questions about all this. And again, very taken with Sherry. Josh, what is your understanding of what was Sherry's relationship with Dr. Carson? He just had a crush on her?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know if that was legit or if that was just like part of the story that Dwight tells to sell somebody under the river for what happened with Sherry and Daryl. She was certainly there. I don't know what it was she was getting checked up on. I don't think that that was ever disclosed on the show. But I feel like, you know, nobody deserves to be thrown into a furnace, Rob and Alex. Like, this is just, you know, common decency. We don't do that as people. That being said, Dr. Carson was really kind of being rude to Dwight, I felt like, and being like, yeah, we don't see people like Sherry anymore. Those people, they do not survive. And hey, you're going to have to make a lot of hard choices in your life. You just got to feel good about that. You're like, you're one of Negan's guys. I feel like I'm one of Negan's guys. We can relate on that level. And you can just see on Dwight's face, he's like, oh, Dr. Carson, I hate this guy.
Yeah.
This guy is the worst. This guy sucks. This guy should be thrown in a fire. Oh, wait, that's a great idea. You can just see how it all comes together.
Yeah. I mean, that Dwight really also not a good guy either, that he's going to frame poor Dr. Carson for Sherry's disappearance.
Well, he probably was an easy target. It did seem like Sherry was spending time in the doctor's office.
He's an easy target.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know exactly what it was, but, you know, yeah, Sherry's been in Dr. Carson's office, you know, a lot for whatever reason. That kind of, you know, already lends, the best lie is one that's steeped in truth, right? So you're already thinking, oh, yeah, Sherry's been spending a lot of time at Dr. Carson's. Oh, yeah, Dr. Carson seems to like Sherry. Oh yeah, you know I could start to see a motive, and you begin to piece it together there. And yeah, I mean, he took all his lollipops too for his trouble. I mean,
yeah, in there. That's right. Adding insult to injury. So all right, so Dwight heads out, and I guess that Dwight's house, him and Sherry's house, was nearby, and that was always their meeting place. That if they ever got separated, he would go back there with beer and pretzels. But we also started to get this notion that Dwight also has some combination of the guy from Memento and Dory, yes, where he is has very forgetful.
He only remembers 7 minutes at a time and has to have his memories tattooed upon his body.
Yeah, what is that? That just got tacked on. Like, oh, yeah, you know how you have a really bad memory and you don't remember anything except, a lot of the things about this relationship?
Yeah, that's a really great character note for just, like, the very forgetful Dwight. Like, you know, poor Dwight was just, like, suffering through, like, I don't know, just, like, some terrible, like, Terry Bauer-esque amnesia. Just something really awful going on.
And does Negan know this? I mean, because you would think that somebody who has this issue with like forgetting things, like couldn't he like forget to go and like, well, that Daryl is in the cell?
Maybe that's why Dr. Carson had to die. Dr. Carson during the physical to Dwight to make sure that Dwight could be one of Negan's top guys. He's like, Dwight, I have determined that you have dementia. You're not all together here. This is not going to be great. I won't tell Negan because you and I are bros. And Dwight is just like, yeah, definitely. But one of these days I'm going to have to make sure that you get killed so no one ever finds out about that.
You know, one thing it does solve is that last season, Josh, you and I were trying to figure out sort of like how much time has gone by while Dwight was with the Saviors, because right, we said that it seems like, I mean, how many times did we hear Easy Street where Dwight brings a dog food sandwich to Daryl? That was just every 10 minutes. Dwight was forgetting that he already did that for the day. That he brought Daryl like 37 sandwiches over 12 hours.
Yeah, the in-between was just him going back to his room, watching the same episode of Who's the Boss, and being okay, now it's time to feed Daryl. Oh, yeah. Okay, Who's the Boss is on. How about that?
And he would never stop because Daryl would be like grumbling through the door like, hey, you already fed me a sandwich, but no one understands what he's saying. Yeah, so there's a communication barrier.
This thing is dry.
Yeah. Alex, what'd you think of the note that Sherry left for Dwight?
You know, it was nice, and I thought it was good that we got, like, you know, some detailed explanation and some kind of background into Dwight and Sherry, because I think they're going to be more important moving forward. Certainly, you know, we haven't come this far with Dwight unless he's going to be some kind of integral element to the Saviors hierarchy. But she could have thrown away the other note, or she could have, like, tried to squiggle her G's a little bit so as not to incriminate herself, the handwriting.
Josh, were you touched by Sherry's note?
It's kind of mean to Dwight, right? Like, how demoralizing. I mean, she's writing this letter only on the off chance that Dwight shows up, right? Like, she's saying, like, I don't even think that you're going to get this letter. So that's, like, the philosophy behind the letter. She is writing this on the super off chance that Dwight shows up. Dwight does indeed show up. And so if he does show up and reads this letter, you want this to just be like trashing on this guy, being like, man, you are a total piece of trash right now. You're just the worst guy. You used to be so cool. You promised me pretzels. You promised me beers. You promised me happy times. But you just kind of suck now. And I doubt that you're ever going to come here. And I hope nothing but the best for you. But I'm expecting the worst. What a demoralizing thing to travel all that distance to find.
But at least she says it's because of her that he sucks. I mean,
I suppose that's true. She's taking ownership.
A little bit like, oh, it's not you, it's me, that you're you.
It was a tough breakup letter. It was difficult. Yeah. What's especially tough about it is, you know, we can mock his memories and his ability to remember things as much as we want, but he did bring the pretzels and the beer.
Yeah,
you know,
he brought it. That.
Well, what's especially tough is that he took a hot iron in the face for this girl. And,
Yeah.
Now, Rob, I have a really important question for you.
Yes.
we did our death draft on the feedback show a couple of weeks back.
Yes.
And as the final pick of the draft and the final person on my team, I had Sherry. Am I going to be able to score any points if we never see Sherry again? Like, do we just assume that she's gone?
Sherry again, Josh.
Really? You think so? Okay, yes. Tell me why.
Because we have this huge hanging chad out there of that Negan killed Dr. Carson on Dwight's account that Sherry is dead and eaten by the walkers. And Negan even says, why would he lie? He knows that if Sherry shows up, I'll brand his other side of his face. So that threat is out there that 100% before the end of season 7, Sherry is going to encounter either the Saviors or Rick's crew.
Justice for Dr. Carson.
Yes, and then that Sherry will then be brought to the attention. And I think that ultimately, I think either we're going to see Dwight flip and be part of the main survivors group, or this is how Dwight is going to get killed, but definitely Sherry is going to be back in the mix.
Less than 10% chance of Moralising.
Yes. Yes. I would bet anything in the next 5 episodes we're going to see Sherry again. Yeah.
So what do you think Dwight was doing here? He shows up, he's got the pretzels, he's got the beer, he knows where to go. What's his plan? Is he leaving at this point? Is he done with the sanctuary? Is he done with the Saviors? Is he planning on reuniting with Sherry and just going wherever she wants to go? Or is she right to suspect that he might try to take her back?
Well, I don't think you bring pretzels and beer if you're dragging her back to Negan.
It's like it's going to be a long trip back.
Yeah.
Remember that time I said pretzels and beer? I brought it, but it's not just a nostalgia thing. It's also practical. We need to eat.
Right. I think they're making a run for it again. I think that that's in his mind. I think that's what he thinks. And then when that option is not afforded to him, he covers for her and just goes back to Negan.
I wonder if he's not just, I mean, he seems like, you know, he's just going through these motions and just doing Negan's bidding for so long. I wonder if he didn't just kind of set out and get there not even knowing really what was going to happen, but just knowing he had to go after her. And, you know, I don't know that he even knew necessarily how it was going to play out himself.
Well, there were three options, right? That he said either you're going to bring her back to him, run away with her, or kill her. And I don't think you bring pretzels and beer if you're going to kill her.
No.
And probably
like final meal, though.
Yeah, I guess so.
But he could still, you know, I could see him getting there and then having the, you know, the getting weak in the knees about the thought of what Negan's going to do to the other half of his face and potentially, you know, having a change of heart in that moment. Like, it's just, I think Dwight is just so conflicted and he's been so, he's been reprogrammed so many times that it's hard to, like, know where that line, where his mind is at.
I think one of the things with Dwight, and I think one of the things that does make this whole situation between Dwight and Sherry even sadder, where she's saying, like, you probably have no memory of any of this, and I hate what I've turned you into, and you're probably not going to be able to come back from it. But Dwight's been carrying around, like, a cigarette box with a cigarette that she smoked. We watched him pick that up, I think, a few episodes back. And he's got, like, their wedding rings and her engagement ring that obviously neither of them were able to wear once she was married to Negan. So, like, he still really is, you know, really carrying a torch for her. Like, he's still really very clearly team Sherry. It's a candle. That's right. I'm going to light this candle. You know, I feel like that's part of what's really upsetting. And that to me suggests that, like, maybe he was planning something similar at some point down the line. Maybe he was working up his courage to, like, busting out of there again and just never gets the chance. And who knows how this plays out. You're more optimistic on seeing Sherry again than I am. I could see the situation where we never see Sherry again on the show.
Okay, well, we end up then with the branding ceremony, and I didn't know who was going to get branded. I thought that it was going to be Dwight again after coming back empty-handed.
And this would have been the boot episode?
Yeah. And instead, we end up with Negan announcing that they found this note, hey, honey, in the doctor's desk, obviously planted by Dwight. And then we have Dr. Carson begging for forgiveness. Alex, did you buy into that Negan was going to forgive Dr. Carson?
No.
Oh, no way.
Not for a second.
Yeah. I don't know that I expected him to throw him into the furnace, though. That's just so dramatic.
Shouldn't have owned up to the thing you didn't do. Even though Negan said that's what he wanted from me. Don't do that. Just be adamant. Even if he's going to burn you, just be adamant you didn't do the thing. If you didn't do the thing.
Yeah.
You got to fight that one.
Oh, boy.
Too much on the line.
Right. He threw him right in there. And
it's incredible upper body strength on Negan's part to just like yank that guy off the ground. He's not like a small guy, too, Dr. Carson. He's a tall fella.
Yeah.
He just launched him into there. It's incredible. It's a really gross thing to do, too. Like that whole place is just going to smell like a body. It's just going to smell like a burned human being for days. They're never going to be able to get that out of
there. That's effective.
The guys from Terminus are going to be coming up for dinner anytime. Yeah. Smell the fumes.
So, you know, Eugene has to witness all of that. And again, see, I thought that's where Eugene had second thoughts on on the pill issue. Do you feel like that affected Eugene in any way, Josh?
No, I feel like Eugene's already got his plan. I feel like, you know, Eugene, listen, we got to give Eugene a little bit of credit here. He's not going to dishonor the memory of his good buddy, Abraham. You know, this guy is never going to be best friends with Negan. He's not going to be on board with a guy who so viciously destroyed the person who saved Eugene's life all of those times in the zombie apocalypse. Eugene is pissed. He's not happy. He's not okay with it. And he just has the tools that are at his disposal, and the tools that are at his disposal are cool magic trick like science experiments, weird concocted plots to cover zombies in metal, maybe an occasional bullet or two, and also lying all the way through his teeth about his background and blending in and just playing a character. So I think for a while, I think all through this episode, he's planning on still being loyal to the Alexandrians.
Josh, so where is this plan going for Eugene? So he's just going to befriend Negan, hang out with him, and then over red or orange spaghetti dinner, then he's going to poison Negan?
Yeah, he'll give him the ricin, and it'll just look like it's the flu. It'll just look like a common sickness, and then it'll be too late. It'll be too late at that point. Hey, obviously, it won't work.
Where's all the cold medicine around here?
I do believe I am the one who knocks.
Yes.
The problem will be is what you didn't count on is I like orangey sauce, and you just have red. I'm not going to eat that.
Oh, but what you didn't account for is that I've built up an immunity to this poison over the years by taking small doses of it.
Never mess with an Alexandrian when death is on the line.
The poison is in both plates, Negan.
Yeah.
So that's exciting.
Bring in the taster.
Anyway, I really love this episode. I feel like, though, that we are not going to get Negan or Eugene, I think, now probably until episode 6. What do you think of that schedule?
Yeah, that seems about right. We're in 3 right now, so we've got 4 next week. Does not look like there will be any Negan action based on the preview.
Look like Rick Michonne and some pouty Rosita next week.
Yeah. Your favorite flavor of Walking Dead.
Fun times at the carnival.
Yes. Pouty backwards baseball hat Rosita looks like
your favorite
next week on The Walking Dead.
I just can't stand here and do nothing anymore.
Guys, come on. Yeah. So that's coming next week.
I look forward to it. You know, I really, really do.
Yeah. But anyway, I thought this was a very, very fun night. I know that you probably liked the premiere more, Josh. Is that fair to say?
Oh, yeah. The premiere is still one of my favorite episodes of Walking Dead in recent memory. But this was pretty high up there, at least this season.
Yeah, I thought it was a fun night. Alex, any other thoughts on this episode?
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I think, you know, sometimes you're watching The Walking Dead and, you know, there's the commercial breaks coming on and you're thinking like, oh, how much longer is this? And then sometimes you're watching and you're thinking like, oh, how much more time how much more episode is there? And I kept like hoping that it wasn't over tonight. And there kept being like a little more segments after commercial breaks where I kept thinking it was over. So,
yeah,
that's always a good sign.
Weird run times on these Walking Deads. They're all like 1 hour and 8 minutes. So it's like I thought it was the end of the episode at one point. And it's like, oh, OK, I guess we're going to keep going. I'm like, why aren't they showing scenes for next week's episode?
Yeah, I remember like the occasional like you go to like 10:03. But like to go to 10:09 just feels
it's just like they just wanted to like screw you for the next show you're going to watch. So it's like, oh, yeah. OK, I guess I'll stay for Talking Dead because everything else already started. Good Talking Dead panel to
I was gonna say to I saw that pop up on my Twitter feed, and I wanted to ask you, like, this seems like some course correction, right? Like, who's on here? We've got Eugene is gonna be there, Dwight
Josh
is
McDermott,
there,
Dwight, and then Little John.
Yeah.
So that panel has to at least
best of the season so far. Yeah, best of the season. I'm looking forward to watching that for our feedback show coming up midweek. Send us your questions, twd@postshowrecaps.com or postshowrecaps.com/voicemail. Josh, you writing anything about this episode for THR?
Yeah, I've got a little bit of a thing up on THR that's going to be about how this episode sort of differs in terms of Eugene's comic book trajectory versus his show trajectory. So if you're a little bit squeamish on the comic book stuff, don't check it out. If you're not so squeamish on that stuff, go to THR.com/WalkingDead and you'll find it.
Okay, so follow Josh on Twitter @RoundHoward as well. Of course, Alex Kidwell is @AlexKidwell.
Yes.
Yes, I heard you are going to have some additional commentary on this episode coming up on Snapchat later tonight.
Is that what? Did I say that?
Yeah, that's what I heard.
I guess I could.
Wow.
I'm looking forward to
that. Door's open.
What a plug. And then, of course, we'll be back with our feedback show later on in the week. Make sure you subscribe to our Walking Dead podcast feed to not miss any of that. Go to postshowrecaps.com/TWD. iTunes, and we do appreciate the feedback and the star ratings in the iTunes store, especially during the Walking Dead season. The Walking Dead podcast has been doing very well in the iTunes charts in the new season.
I like that.
So appreciate it.
I said this somewhere else. I feel like, Walking Dead itself, maybe not firing on all cylinders. I feel good about the podcast. I think we're doing good podcasting here, fellas.
Fun podcasting here.
Absolutely.
In the second half of season 7. What is the hashtag for this episode?
The Pickles Bjorn.
Pickle Bjorn. I think that's pretty good. Fun stuff tonight. I won't ask anybody to spell Grumbledygronk either.
I really hope that Grumbledygorn becomes a really great character on Walking Dead, and B, a purchasable action figure. I feel like would be a great fate for that character.
I don't know what it was. It was like one of those like knockoff Kermit the Frogs you do get at a fair that they didn't pay copyright license fees for.
Maybe next week is the 90-minute flashback episode of Grumbledygook.
Yeah. Sounds good. All right, everybody. Have a good one. Take care. Bye.